Talking Wellness at Memorial Care Health System. It's time for Weekly Dose of Wellness. Here's Deborah Howell.
Hello, and welcome to the show. You are listening to Weekly Dose of Wellness. It's brought to you by Memorial Care Health System. I'm Deborah Howell with today's guest. He is Dr. Gary Feldman, Medical Director of the Stramsky Children's Developmental Center, Miller Children's Hospital, Long Beach, since 2004. Dr. Feldman received his Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery degree from the University of Cape Town School of Medicine in South Africa. He completed his residency in pediatrics at Red Cross Children's Hospital and University of Cape Town in South Africa, and worked in primary care pediatrics for 5 years prior to moving to the United States in 1999. He's a member of the Academy of Sleep Medicine and Society for Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics. Welcome to you, Dr. Feldman.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, I could talk to you forever about Cape Town, one of my very favorite places to visit. But today's topic is autism. So let's get right in. How common is autism?
That's a hotly debated topic. And every year the numbers seem to indicate that it's becoming more and more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's increasing. Right now, if you look at it on a sort of a global perspective, approximately 1% of the world population has autism,
mm-hmm.
or will be diagnosed with autism. And if you break it down to what the figures are in the United States, presently about 1 in 88 children will be diagnosed with the condition. And if you break it down further, you can probably say about 1 in 50 of those will be males, and 1 in 250 of those will be females.
Wow. So that's fairly common for sure, at least in our country.
Those are the figures that we have here, you know, and it's the research is difficult to ascertain, you know, around the world and to kind of make it reliable. But what seems to be happening, you know, is this the case? Are these numbers increasing because people are just getting better at diagnosing the condition?
Right. That was
or
my question.
Is it because it's actually the incidence is actually increasing? And the answer is probably a little bit of both.
Okay. Because it was very rare when I was coming up. You just didn't hear about it. And now it's everywhere. I mean, it's all over the media. So what are some of the signs and symptoms of autism?
You know, Deborah, you can basically break it down into two broad categories. The first is a problem or difficulty with social communication.
Mm-hmm.
Social communication is this weird, unspoken way of how we talk to each other. Without
mm-hmm.
using words. You know, the analogy is the young couple that are in love that are now in a restaurant and they're having their sort of romantic dinner. And they're sitting across the table and they're looking at each other and they're not saying a single word.
Nothing.
But they're looking at each other and the mm-hmm. and the raising of the eyebrows and mm-hmm. the slight smile of out of the corner of the one side of the mouth. They all mean things.
Yes.
And they're interpreted, and then the partner will respond with something else. And it's all a kind of nonverbal communication that takes place. And we do it all the time. You know, when we talk to each other, we're using our hands to gesture because we're trying to convey some kind of meaning. We may be watching someone to see what their reaction is when we're talking and thinking, oh my gosh, they're interested. Maybe I should stop talking. Or they're
right.
looking like they're really interested. That means I need to talk some more or keep on the topic. So that's just a little sort of the tip of the iceberg to explain sort of what social communication is, and if we have time, we can swing back on that. So that's the one category: the problems with social communication. The other category is sort of an intense interest or need for things that are the same. So an intense need for rituals, living a very ritualistic life, and doing repetitive behaviors, and these can be what people obviously know is the pacing up and down, the
mm-hmm.
walking back and forth on the toes, the hand flapping, preoccupation with movement, spinning of wheels.
I hadn't heard that one.
Thanks.
I was thinking of more of was Rain Man based on an autistic person?
Yeah.
That movie? When you think of Dustin Hoffman walking back and forth and needing to see the same show over and over and over and over.
Exactly. So, you know, for kids, commonly what they'll do for the repetitive behaviors, they might have a favorite DVD that they're watching, and they'll watch either the whole DVD over and over again, or they'll actually select a section within a DVD
mm-hmm.
and loop that and play it over and over again. And these kids will do a lot of what we call scripting. So they might learn a phrase. So, you know, an autistic child who likes Toy Story might keep saying repeatedly, to infinity and beyond, to infinity and beyond. And it'll be totally out of context.
Yeah.
You know, hi, Johnny, how are you? And he'll say, to infinity and beyond.
Right.
Repeatedly. They may just repeat words like, hi, how are you? And the child will say, hi, how are you? So it's really just sort of a repetitive, what we call echolalia. And that's just another example of this, of some of these stereotyped patterns of behavior.
Which sort of makes them targets at school, I would imagine, you know.
I think everything about autistic behaviors makes kids targeted schools. I think, you know, you can have kids who don't have these repetitive behaviors and these intense dependencies on routine. They can just have, like, you can have a child who's got high functioning autism who his or her main problem is with social communication.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have that in a middle schooler who just doesn't get the social rules, doesn't understand things and how they can be so easily marginalized and bullied.
Yeah, it's very, very sad. What are some of the basic risk factors of autism, if I may ask you?
So by that question, I'm kind of assuming what is the cause?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a great question because there is not one single answer. So to look at it, one can say, if you look at the more sort of typical type of autism, the more common types of autism, in that situation, there is no single known cause. What is thought is that there is a genetic predisposition to having autism, and there are a number of what they call candidate genes that may be more vulnerable to having this predisposition. So on the one hand, you've got to have this genetic predisposition,
mm-hmm.
and on the other hand, you've got to have some kind of trigger that, in a sense, unveils or unearths this predisposition so that it actually mm-hmm. becomes a condition. And that is probably something in the environment. It could be exposure to environmental toxins. It could be something related to the immune system. We just don't understand. But what it looks like is there's either one or a series of triggers that trigger a sort of preset genetic vulnerability
mm-hmm.
to then to manifest this condition.
And the research continues to find those triggers.
The research continues to find those triggers, absolutely. Then the other subset is more a sort of a single gene identifiable condition. So there are some genetic conditions like Fragile X syndrome, like tuberous sclerosis, even conditions just located on the 15th chromosome, which are more sort of identifiable. If you have problems in those areas,
mm-hmm.
then you have a greater chance of actually developing autism.
And then, how is autism diagnosed?
Right now, it's basically diagnosed on observation and history.
Mm-hmm.
The best are blood tests presently to do it. So, we could have blood tests if you had a heart attack. We could do blood and kind of measure enzymes and various factors and say, well, it looks like you probably had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
That's like no luck for that with autism right now. So, essentially, it boils down to a parent giving a history and how well the history is obtained.
Right.
And that could be done by talking to the parents, talking to teachers, talking to whoever knows the child, and by giving parents or teachers questionnaires which have been designed to elicit information and a detailed history about autistic-like behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And then observation, observing the child. And you can observe the child just in their free play, and you want to observe them in as many situations as you can. And then they have developed, observational tests, which is an attempt to kind of standardize the observation of the child to see whether their behaviors, when sort of pushed, if you like, or pressed
mm-hmm.
In any given situation, assess their response, and then that's quantified in an attempt to kind of give a more quantification of the behaviors to see whether they're consistent with autism.
We have so much more to cover, but we have less than 2 minutes.
My goodness.
For soon-to-be moms listening or mothers who have a child with autism, where can they go to learn more?
With internet now, I would suggest the go-to website would be autismspeaks.org.
AutismSpeaks.org, okay?
Yeah. It's a great place. It's a great resource. You know, not everything on the internet is great, and Autism Speak on generally has a lot of good stuff. There may be some information that may be questionable, but on the whole, I think that is a really reputable place to go. It also has a lot of information on books that they can read.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Dr. Feldman, for being with us. Will you come back so we can explore this topic more? There's so much we didn't get a chance to cover today.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you very much for the hard work you do, and best of luck on finding those and isolating those triggers. To listen to the podcast or for more information, please visit memorialcare.org. That's memorialcare.org. I'm Deborah Howell. Join us again next time as we explore another weekly dose of wellness. Have a great day.